harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight, old mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and fought and died in peace. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warning. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought-or-died key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. If you don't love and leave it, let this song I'm singing be warned. And you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of those who might be listening this morning in the European heartland. did you catch the short talk at the United Nations emergency climate session on Monday, the speech by this mouthy, weird Greta Thunberg, I saw the video and the twisted face, and her bio says she's 16. She looks like 10. In fact, I had an argument with a good supporter in Regina last night. I shouldn't say arguments. He thought one thing, I thought another. He said she's 10. I said, "Mom, I don't think she's." What I've read is that she's 16. Well, sure enough, I was right. She's 16, but I certainly understand why he would say what he did. She sure doesn't look it. But the preachy, twisted language and the face, I mean, that chick was demented. And one of the few people who's actually called her out on her egregious nonsense is the leader of the People's Party of Canada, Maxime Bernier. And Maxime Bernier got into a lot of trouble for saying that she does have mental problems. Apparently she suffered from depression. I think she has some sort of Asperger syndrome. And wisdom is not age-specific. And I'm not somebody who, just because I happen to be a good deal older than that person feels that they have nothing to say or nothing to contribute. But for one thing, Greta Thunberg does not have any new original knowledge. She is simply parroting the climate hysteria that she is presumably being taught in school. That's what it is. It's hysteria verging on madness. The Earth is not about to become a crisp. She talks about settled science. Actually, it's not settled science. There's a considerable question as to whether the Earth is indeed warming up. And then to talk about climate change as somehow man-made, it simply is not. Every natural event that happens, let's say that as it happened over the weekend, there was very heavy rain in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Now that's not necessarily climate change. That's an incident. Now, if year after year, for a period of time, there was very heavy, unusual rainfall, that would be to some degree climate change. And heavy rainfall is not necessarily a bad thing. it may be annoying, and it may be something at a given time you have to learn to adapt to. I have visited places with heavy rainfall, like the island of one side of the island of Kauai. In Hawaii, sometimes gets up to 600 inches of rain a year. I've also visited places that get relatively little rainfall, like Las Vegas and so on. The climate change is not necessarily bad. It may simply be different from what you've had before. But anyway, there is a sinister agenda going on here. And this is an article from Breitbart, and the picture that illustrates this. But you could have seen this, if you watched TV last night. Before I get into it, the picture here is frightening. She's 16, has, from what I can tell from the what she's wearing, has no breasts at all. Now, I'm not making what some people would say was a sexist comment. I only mention this, and she looks so young, and yet she's young but has an old face, and her mouth is open, her eyes are glaring, she's in a rage. I'm with Maxime Bernier. The chick's got mental problems. You can feel sorry for her. Somebody ought to give her parents a good spanking for letting this girl out of the house. She ought to be in school. In fact, she says she ought to be in school. Well, she should be. What's she doing at the UN? Here's another question. Who's paying for this? Now, she made her way across the Atlantic, believe it or not, as I understand it, in a boat that left no carbon footprint. I think it was some sort of super-duper sailboat with a crew. Well, who paid for that? She's staying in New York at the UN. Well, who paid for that? I mean, she's speaking at the UN. She's spoken to Congress. I believe she's in Canada today, in Montreal. Who's paying for all this? You know, there's an agenda here. If she was a particularly brilliant little girl who had come up with some startling insights, I think everybody should be listened to. And somebody should not be, excluded from an audience simply because they're 16, that person's 16. But what does she have to say except scolding, haranguing her betters? This is the Breitbart story. President Donald Trump mocked teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg, good for him, on Monday evening after she sent leftists swooning with her tearful accusatory speech at the United Nations earlier in the day in New York. Thunberg came to the United States on a zero-emissions sailboat owned by the royal family of Monaco. Okay, so somebody's putting up the money. And, you want to ask, why are they putting up the money? What's the agenda here? Well, the agenda is the destruction of the West, the economic destruction of the West. Take away our carbon fuels, or we'll be back to an ice age. Oh, I know. There'll be wind power and solar power. You want to see some of the solar power in parts of northern Europe where they don't get a whole lot of sun? Not all people who are worrying themselves sick about so-called climate change are wrong. They're misguided, but they're not wrong. And I think some genuinely are struggling to try to come to grips with what they believe is going to change the world. With, you know, depending on which story you believe, under the old global warming, well, we're going to all fry to a crisp or boil within, you know, half a century or so. Well, now it's more climate change, and you can blame everything on it. There's a hurricane in the Bahamas, it's climate change. There's a lot of rain for one weekend in Winnipeg, it's climate change. Well, actually it isn't. The Caribbean's had hurricanes for many, many, many years. There's nothing new about this. This was a particularly bad one, and it hammered the Bahamas. Yeah, that's sad and all that. It's not even climate change. These hurricanes are unpredictable. Sometimes they'll veer away from land and not do any damage. Sometimes they'll hit land and do tremendous damage. Now, any bad piece of stretch of bad weather, it's climate change, and it's all our fault. Well, it's not our fault. Anyway, sorry, back to the story. This is part of the scolding little girl's tirade. This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. Well, she's right about that. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. She's right about that. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? Well, I don't know. I'm not coming to her for hope, and I'm probably pretty sure you're not. We don't need this this propagandized little green guard, or like a red guard under the Maoists. Anyway, you've stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. Stolen your dreams? I don't know what her dreams were. Stolen her childhood? I think somebody's abused the poor little chick with a lot of nonsense about in fear mongering that we're all going to go up in smoke or something. And yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We're in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can do is talk about money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? Remember, face absolutely contorted. And she said, how dare you? Well, we're not facing mass extinction. We're not. We are thanks to the Green Revolution, we're producing more food than we ever have. Far fewer people on this earth are facing starvation than did 30 years ago. Now, I'm certainly not saying all is well, and I'm certainly not saying there aren't places where the environment is under severe stress. That's true. You're failing us, but the young people are starting to understand your betrayal. The eyes of all future generations are upon you. And if you choose to fail us, I say, we will never forgive you. Oh, what does that mean? We'll put all the older generation in the concentration camps. At one point, Thunberg and Trump crossed paths when the president made an unexpected visit to the UN climate meeting. And there's a picture here. Greta Thunberg's glare at Donald Trump. You should see that. Staring eyes, askew mouth, puffed out cheeks. The left hailed Thunberg as a hero, using her speech to attack the president, who famously pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accords in 2017. Several of Trump's would-be rivals in the 2020 election praised her speech, and he's right. Trump did the right thing. It's suicidal. Some of the proposals of the radical climate change lobby. best-selling author and Breitbart News entertainment editor Jerome Hudson notes in his book, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know, the U.S. has lowered emissions while growing its economy through the use of fracking, a practice that most of the Democrat candidates want to stop, including, Hillary Clinton. Thunberg did not endorse nuclear power as zero emissions technology or any other solution. Thunberg, of course, has had a picture taken with her, being embraced by, you guessed it, George Soros. Dr. James Sanchez says, I know what you're thinking. Oh yeah, well, if Soros is behind it, where's the picture of Greta Thunberg and George Soros? Well, there it is. The scary thing about this is that there really is a following to that she's amassed, like it or not. So we need to be very definite about rejecting this, and not going along with this. This brave, wise little girl. She's not brave. She's certainly not wise. And the best thing that can be said is she's probably somebody's mouthpiece. I'd very much like to know whose. Well, I'd like to thank Adela for sending this my way. It's a story from Europe, and it just shows the fixation on the part of much of the European establishment, especially the European Union establishment, with censorship, thought censorship, and speech censorship. The UEFA is punishing Slovakia, Hungary, and Romania with stadium closures. That's the European Union Football Association. Slovakia, Hungary, and Romania have been hit with European Union Football Association sanctions, including stadium closures, after being charged with racist behavior by the governing body. So so for several games, they will have to, I guess, take a complete financial whooping. The games will have to be played in an empty stadium. That will punish you. The trio of nations landed in hot water after the recent round of Euro 2020 qualifying matches, with incidents of racism among the charges leveled at all three. You know, that's expressing a point of view. And sometimes, football fans, sometimes maybe a little fueled by alcohol, may shout out things that are racially offensive. That's really just letting off steam. Okay. Slovakia and Hungary, who met on September 9th in Budapest, must each play their next UEFA competition match behind closed doors, as ordered by the UEFA Control Ethics and Disciplinary Body. Both were accused of racist behavior among their fans, with Hungary supporters also found to have thrown objects and set off fireworks, while an additional charge was brought relating to the conduct of the team. Slovakia's fans were also deemed to have engaged in racist chanting, and with the same offense committed by Romania's followers as their team took on Spain and Malta earlier this month. Racist chanting! Shut those people up! In fact, throw them out of the stadium! Now, I would agree that if fans are, some of the fans in Hungary threw objects or set off fireworks. All right, what should be done? Well, people committing violence, of course, I think should be arrested and put out of the stadium, and if the cause was, situation warrants it, charged. But just chanting, racist chanting, This is thought control. The Romanian Football Federation was ordered to ensure the next UEFA competition match was played behind closed doors, with the second game subject to a one-year probationary suspension. I'm not sure what that means. Financial penalties were also dished out, with fines of €83,000, which would be roughly about $110,000 Canadian dollars for the Romanian Football Federation, and €67,125 for the Hungarian Football Federation, and €20,000 for the Slovakian Football Association. Slovakia's next game is against Wales on October 10th, while Hungary hosts Azerbaijan 3 days later, and Romania welcomes Norway for 2 days beyond that, which is, I guess, the particulars of the European football or soccer season, not of special interest to us. But this is the cultural Marxist thought control. Racist, but you know, well, we were of course never privileged to know what the racist slant chants were, and this is control of people by these big international bodies. Bad news for a person I consider a friend of mine. I sponsored her on a speaking tour of Canada, or the Canadian Association for Free Expression, sponsored her on a speaking tour of Canada. Let me think. This would be 3 years ago, and her name is Alison Chablot. Alison is a lounge singer, a chanteuse. She entertained on various cruises, and has paid a very, very steep price for what she's done. Very recently, Allison, about 4 years ago, Allison started composing some satirical songs about the Holocaust and Holocaust survivors, including some of the outrageous claims of some of the survivors, including, for instance, one woman named Irene Sisblatt, who many, many years after World War II seemed to want to get in on the, publish a book about my sad experiences and so on. And she claimed to have been in Auschwitz. And she, in her book, there are claims that are preposterous. I'll only mention one. Apparently, the family entrusted her with their wealth, which was in the form of diamonds. And according to her book, every day she would swallow all the diamonds, and then defecate them out and pick them out of her, the next day, and swallow them again. And does this seem possible to you? I ask. And does it seem likely? The other part of the story is that they're starving to death or something close to it. Does it seem likely that this would happen? And you'd be wiping off diamonds, and the story, challenges the imagination. Well, Allison mocked these and other claims, including claims by the great Holocaust historian, another alleged survivor, Elie Wiesel. And it turned out Elie Wiesel did not have a tattoo. Did the Germans kind of forget to put it on his arm? Interestingly, although Elie Wiesel said that every person should keep in a corner of his heart a hatred for what is the German. Ironically, when Auschwitz was closed in January 1945, as the Russians were approaching, The Germans gave the prisoners, the detainees, an option. Either wait for the approaching Russians or come west with the Germans. Now, what did Elie Wiesel, the great sufferer, do? Wait for the communists? Wait for the Soviets? No. He went west with the Germans. Duh. Anyway, whatever your views about World War II, this is an issue of free speech. Now, Alison Chablot has just been sentenced to 2 months in prison. This is not directly punishing her for her songs. This is because she posted some things on the social media about her case. Now, I believe she felt that she had done this after her parole conditions had expired. The courts felt differently. But for posting nonviolent information about her own case on the social media, Alison Chablot is sent to jail. Now, I'm going to give my little commentary and then read from a poisonous report by the Center for Center Against Anti-Semitism, which is a powerful manifestation of the Jewish lobby in Britain. And these are the campaign against anti-Semitism, and these are the people that pressured the government to charge her initially, and have hounded her ever since. Now the very powerful Jewish anti-free speech lobby and complicit courts have just sent Alison Chablot to prison for 2 months for using the social media to update her supporters. Internet silence was one of the conditions for her suspended sentence last year for singing satirical songs about the Jewish claims about World War II. In a ruling reminiscent of Red Chinese billing the family for the cost of the bullet to shoot the dissidents, Ms. Chablot has also been assessed £175, or roughly $203 Canadian, for court costs. The Jewish lobby has a particular term for criticizing Jews. They say that one is indulging in anti-Semitic tropes. It's not a fantasy or our imagination. Here is the crowing, self-congratulatory statement put out by Ms. Chablot's Jewish tormentors, reveling in their role in silencing her and in directing the courts to act against her. Poor little Britain. And this is a somewhat edited report for the Center for the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. I only say edited in that I've taken out some of the neo-Nazi and Holocaust denial and verbiage, and just try to more or less get to the gist of it. Moments ago, notorious anti-Semite and Holocaust denier Alison Chablot was jailed for 8 weeks, of which she will serve at least four. She was ordered to pay court costs of £175 within 10 weeks. Court costs, that's, just as I suggested, as in Red China, during the madness of Mao, the family being sent a bill for the bullet that was used to shoot the dissident. District Judge Jonathan Taff found Ms. Chablot guilty of breaching the conditions of her suspended sentence after blog posts that she published since June 2018 were found to constitute a breach of a social media ban. Notice the silencing. Now, not only was she punished for her songs. Somebody punished for songs. I mean, my gosh. But for a period, she was banned from being on the social media. In other words, silenced, a non-person. Ms. Chablot was handcuffed in court to begin her sentence as her parents, who were in attendance, looked on. The trial in Chesterfield today followed contact between the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, part of the Jewish lobby, lawyers, and the National probation service. Last year, Ms. Chablot was convicted on 3 charges of sending grossly offensive communications via a public communications network. That case began as a private prosecution by the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, which was then taken over by the Crown Prosecution Service. The charges related to 3 self-penned songs in which she denounced a supposed Jewish conspiracy to dominate the world and attack the Holocaust as a fraud perpetrated by Jews for financial gain. That's kind of overstating what she said, what the songs did point at. Was that the story tales of the Holocaust are, well, some of them are preposterous. And actually, one of the complainants, named Felter, who was CEO of the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, had to admit that not all of what appeared in Irene, for instance, Irene Sisblatt's book was, well, actually true. He admitted he hadn't read the book, so I mean, how he can be an expert on something he hasn't read is a bit of a stretch. But beyond that, he had to admit that, well, you know, she may have maybe misremembered certain things, or in other words, she lied, or well, let's say her stories were just egregiously unbelievable. The conviction set a new precedent in British law, effectively delivering a landmark precedent verdict on incitement on social media and on whether the law considers Holocaust denial to be grossly offensive and therefore illegal when used as a means in which to hound Jews. You mean to express yourself? Ms. Chablot was sentenced to a 20-week prison sentence, suspended for 2 years, 180 hours of unpaid community service, and an indefinite order against contacting 2 leaders of the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, as well as an order banning her from social media for 12 months. She was ordered to pay $115 victim surcharge. Who's the victim here? She's the victim. And costs of £600. Earlier this year, the conviction and sentence were upheld at the Southern Crown Court. Ms. Chablot has been banned from entering France, where Holocaust cost questioning is illegal. She's banned for 40 years. That's still 2059, by which time she'll be, I think she'll be, 90 years old or something. Now, who's responsible for this? Well, it's not the Icelanders, is it? You know, it's a very powerful Jewish lobby in the United Kingdom and in France. And, you know, let's call a spade a spade. Some will say, that's anti-Semitic. No, it's not anti-anybody. It's saying what is. Who is doing this? Who is attacking free speech? You know, it's not the Icelanders. Stephen Silverman, Director of Investigations and Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Let's read that one more time slowly. Stephen Silverman, Director of Investigations and Enforcement at Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, said, "We are delighted that justice has taken its proper course. Today's trial follows contact between the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism lawyers and the National Probation Service, and we are grateful for their cooperation. We hope that this sentence will send a message that anti-Semitism is unacceptable and that the courts will not hesitate to use the power at their disposal to bring offenders to justice." So, criticism of Jews is very dangerous, is unacceptable. And who instigated this further punishment of Alison Chablot? This is not conspiracy theory. Stephen Silverman, Director of Investigations and Enforcement of the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. That sounds like a government body. Enforcement. This is enforcement of silence. Let's make no mistake about it. And you know, this is profoundly disturbing that this is happening. Well, here's a boo-hoo-hoo. outrage machine moves in all directions. And this is by Alex Wong. And he is unhappy that some people have begun to complain about something called the cancel culture. Last week's NBC Saturday Night Live announced the hiring of three new featured performers for their upcoming 45th season: Chloe Fineman, Shane Gillis, and Bowen Yang. For the Asian community, it was a celebration of a new milestone. For the first time, Saturday Night Live would have a regular performer of Asian descent. Those feelings of pride were short-lived, however, as the internet soon unearthed a clip from Gillis, he's one of the new comedians, a podcast, Matt and Shane's secret podcast, in which Gillis used multiple racial slurs and derogatory language. As everyone waited for NBC to issue a statement, they eventually dropped Gillis. Gillis himself tweeted out an apology, claiming he's simply a comedian who pushes boundaries. In taking those risks, he explained, sometimes he might miss his mark. I'm happy to apologize to anyone who's actually offended by anything I said. It's hard to read the response as anything other than condescending, complains Alex Wong. The addition of the word actually minimizes the offense that an entire race of people might feel for being reduced to a stereotype and mocked with language that has been hurtful. You know, boo-hoo-hoo-hoo. In fact, do most people deeply care what a comedian says? I don't think so. Wong goes on to say, it suggests that the only thing inappropriate about using racist language is the outrage it causes, not the terrible terminology. This concept is familiar to other comedians. As public taste, especially in younger generations, has moved toward what is often unflatteringly referred to as politically correct culture. The comedians and others have complained about what is called the cancel culture, and that's it. The penalty for a remark that some people might find offensive is you're fired, you are gone. And that has happened a lot in entertainment. Of course, it's happened with political candidates in Canada. It isn't that, well, okay, I don't like your humor, I won't be listening to you, or I won't be taking in your show. Fair enough. It's a matter of taste. But I don't like your humor, and you should be fired. Anyway, Alex Wong doesn't agree with that. He says it's used as this concept is familiar to other comedians. In fact, the increasing use of the catch-all term cancel culture to push back against this perceived evil of political correctness has become part of their act. It's used as a constant crutch, not just as cover for using despicable terms, but as a way to justify, he says, tired jokes, etc. Consider two recent Netflix specials from two of the most successful comedians currently active, Dave Chappelle and Bill Burr. Both spend an inordinate amount of time at the beginning of their routines complaining about the current landscape in which everyone is triggered and in need of a safe space. And it's right. Somebody's triggered by a remark, and they want to inflict havoc on the person who makes the remark. And we are becoming an increasingly humorless, joyless society. Then he then goes on to say, Gillis's comments exhibited the same kind of dismissiveness that I continue to witness in my life and the lives of people of my race. This is Alex Wong, who's Chinese. When I take offense at these, when I voice my anger over racist terms, I have no thoughts about cancel culture. There is no joy in seeing someone lose their job or have their career ruined. There's nothing exciting about having to revisit the stereotype and racial slurs we deal with on a day-to-day basis. Really? Really? in North America? I doubt it. How ecstatic are we supposed to feel to be reminded once again that people like us are marginalized and viewed as inferior by others? Marginalized. Really? You're on the margins. You are writing for, the Weekend Post. I'm not. Many educated Chinese are doing extremely well in North America. How are they marginalized? And I know, but not so much so that you want to move back to China, right? Oh, boo-hoo-hoo. Sometimes some people think offensively about us. he complains about cheap shots about Chinese not being very good drivers. Well, as a matter of fact, they're not. And I've had Chinese admit to me, you know, just as a group, we're just not very good drivers. And I have speculated, and I could be wrong on this, but one of the reasons is either their eyesight is poor or they have poor peripheral vision. And so they focus on the license plate of the car ahead of them. And that's not the best way to drive. You've got to be conscious of the whole road to be able to anticipate situations. And I'm not denying there might be the odd good Chinese driver. But it's a generality that tends to be true. They're not very good drivers. Well, these are cruel jokes. he concludes his article, forget about suspicions that some may be feigning offense. Stop wondering how many people are gleeful over his potential downfall. Don't worry about motivations. It's wrong to refer to people as that, as chinks. Plain and simple. And it's actually offensive. In 2019, and calling racist language racist shouldn't be all that hard. Well, that's a matter of opinion. And it should be a matter of free expression. And those who don't like that type of language don't have to listen to it and don't have to support those type of comics. This is part of, and the comedian's complaint is entirely justified, that this really is snowflake culture. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to take my musical break now, and I'm going to play a few songs by a blonde, really creative singer, songwriter, and entertainer, Becky Hobbs. And she's a woman with a lot of potential who is a great entertainer and never seemed to quite, I think, get the full recognition she deserved. And this is a great autobiographical song, The Boots I Came to Town In. Becky Hobbs.
My name is Antonio Park.
Montreal. Well, we've got an ad that we didn't really want, but okay, we'll see. Try to suppress it. Becky Hobbs, The Boots I Came to Town In.
Some holes from all that I've been through. They tell
the wise. They drove that hammer down to Music City, USA, and they held up my shaking legs on the Opry stage. In looking back, I'm proud to say, through all the ups and downs, the boots I came to town in always stood their ground. Now I've dreamed about this special night, and man, there's quite a crowd. And if they call my name, I'll be walking proud. My head's up in the clouds, but I'm on solid ground, 'cause the boots I came to town in are underneath this sequin gown. The boots I came to town in once were shiny new. Now these old souls have got some holes from all that they've been through. They take me where I'm going, they know where I've been. The boots I came to town in remind me who I am. Will take me on the beat.
Here's a guy who speaks well for Cajun country, Louisiana man himself, Mr. Doug Kershaw.
That's the Ragin' Cajun, Doug Kershaw, and that was actually not the song. I expect to have another song by Becky Hobbs, and we will just try to bring that to you right now. Here's another great one of hers, Jones on the Jukebox, of course, about the possum.
Can I have chocolate, please?
George Jones. We have another ad that we didn't want, can't easily suppress, so this is Becky Hobbs. Jones on the Jukebox. Becky Hobbs, and that's Jones on the Jukebox, You on My Mind. Here's another one by Becky, The Baxter Cowgirl's Heart. This is actually from a performance she gave in Poland.
Yeah. But I remember how you got your start. You sure knew how to win a cowboy's heart. Yeah, you sure knew how to win this cowgirl's heart.
That's Becky Hobbs, Cowgirl's Heart. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio.com. Back with the game tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign up tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. Thank you.